Okay, that was Paul Jones. The CD is called Clean, and the song is called Alphabet Soup. This is a new CD in my collection, and Paul Jones is on tenor saxophone, Alex Loray on alto saxophone, Matt Davis on guitar, Glenn Zaleski on piano, Johannes Feltscher on bass, and Jimmy McBride on drums. Okay. And let's see, what track we listened to was three. Let's see who else is playing on that. Nancy Belmont on bassoon. She was on that track. And Susan Mandel on cello. Interesting. Huh. Okay, so. And then there's the Snap Saxophone Quartet. This is an interesting project. Okay. So, well, I'm going to share a little bit with you of... okay, we don't want that. Let's just... Oh, I see what I want to do is close the playlist. Okay, so I'm pretty much out of here, except that there's a little bit I want to share with you. Let me just check and see. Okay. All right, so, okay, let's do this. So I just wanted to share with you, we know that Jerry Lewis, the great comedian, had passed away at the age of 91 last Sunday, and there's a bit of an article here by Jeremy Dauber from August 21st from the New York Times, calling him, it says, Jerry Lewis was the quintessential American Jew. Says Jerry Lewis, who died Sunday at 91, was not a man often overlooked or pigeonholed, but in reckoning with his legacy, there is often one surprising omission. He is rarely featured in discussions of the pantheon of mid-20th century Jewish comedy. Possibly this was because of his overwhelming popularity, tending to remove the necessity for any qualifying adjective. Looking at pictures of the crowds flocking to catch a glimpse of him and his partner Dean Martin at their hotels, you'd think you were witnessing Beatlemania, only Martin and Lewis were 10 years earlier. It certainly had something to do with this comedy itself, which was rarely, if ever, identifiably Jewish, in the manner of Lenny Bruce, Mel Brooks, or Woody Allen. But Mr. Lewis's most successful work was, in its own way, a fundamental part of the great story of Jewish comedy in America, a story that also functions as a microcosm of American Jewish life writ large. It was a metaphor for the successes and the anxieties of a generation of post-war American Jews of the 1950s, busily engaged, often extraordinarily successful, and trying to prove they were no different than anyone else. They wanted to believe they were the same, and yet their creative success, paradoxically, was born of the tension that their very real difference created. The comedian's two most accomplished successes are cases in point. The Martin and Lewis partnership worked spectacularly in the way most comic duos do, the juxtaposition of opposites. Mr. Martin was a suave, elegant, straight man. Mr. Lewis was manic and kinetic. As far as Mr. Lewis got, maybe a part of him couldn't help but feel that he got there because there was a Mr. Martin to show who he wasn't, and in fact, couldn't be. Maybe Mr. Lewis's aspiration to Mr. Martin's genteel gentility, while at the same time realizing and fearing that the very reason people adored him was because of his shtick, was part of the tension that eventually broke up the team. Not that there weren't many other reasons, and the insecurity certainly flowed both ways, but this aspect wasn't particularly subtle. It's certainly significant, for example, that one of Mr. Lewis's post-Martin and Lewis efforts ventured directly into Mr. Martin's territory, recording an album of standards called Jerry Lewis Just Sings. But this tension took on a much wider significance when, a few years later, Mr. Lewis readdressed his yearnings in his comedic masterpiece, a movie that, without a single rabbi anywhere, has almost as much to say about American Jewish life and particularly the hopes for and anxieties about fitting in and making it than any other movie of the period. The Nutty Professor is a 1963 comedy about a nebbishy, klutzy college professor named Julius Kelp, who, taking a page from Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, drinks a serum he concocts in order to turn into somebody else. But while Stevenson's Victorian doctor wants to allow his less socially accepted urges free rein, Mr. Lewis's comical Zlob, a kind of Mad Magazine parody come to life, turns into a cool nightclub singer, Buddy Love. Whether Buddy Love was based on Mr. Martin or not, opinion is divided. Mr. Lewis said he wasn't, and almost everyone else believed he was. He was certainly the apotheosis of a kind of American Jewish yearning. The man women wanted, the man men wanted to be. Julius Kelp, note, that weedy early 20th century Jewish name, really, who was who Jews feared everyone thought they were. After the movie came out, Mr. Lewis admitted he was surprised at that one aspect of its success. He had written Buddy Love as a bad guy as a way to help Kelp and audiences learn that you have to like yourself to have others like you. The movie ends with a love interest confessing she preferred the nutty genius to the sexy crooner, but audiences preferred Love in a big way. Mr. Lewis's bemusement about that phenomenon spoke to an essential American Jewish truth of the period, wrought truer in his film than perhaps he knew. Did a collectively imagined American dream appeal more strongly than your personal history? Can you really have both without a magic potion or split personality? And if so, which one would you rather give up? It's a tension that American Jews, and not just American Jews, have been thinking about for a long time. And few explored it as sensitively or humorously as Mr. Lewis. This is Jeremy Dauber. He's a professor of Jewish literature at Columbia University. His new book, Jewish Comedy, A Serious History, will be out in October. Well, thanks to Alan for that very interesting article. And I guess, I don't know. It doesn't look like, okay. So it doesn't look like our, all right, so let's get, now where's Rivendell here? Because, yeah, here we go. So main log. Select log. Okay, today is 8/23, I believe. Let's see, what's the date today? 8/23. Okay. And here we go. See you next week, and don't be late.
Boston Pops, and you're listening to Tufts University Radio, WMFO 91.5 FM.
It'll hold up. things like mine. To every soul that feels it's time to step across that line, when music gets my way.
Happy birthday, Smokey Bear. The great outdoors and everyone in it thanks you for 70 years of wildfire prevention. For safety tips, visit SmokeyBear.com. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state foresters, and the Ad Council.
Oh, what a lonely boy. Oh, what a lonely boy. This is Freeman Dyson, and you're listening to WMFO in Medford, 91.5 FM, Tufts Freeform Radio.
When I've started to notice that I long for you, don't know how to tell you, don't know what to do.
Hookah chaka, hookah, hookah, hookah chaka, hookah, hookah, hookah chaka, hookah, hookah, hookah chaka, hookah, hookah.
I can't stop this feeling deep inside of me. Girl, you just don't realize what you do to me. When you hold me in your arms so tight, you let me know everything's alright. I'm hooked on a feeling. I'm high on believing that you're in love with me. Lips as sweet as candy, its taste is on my mind. The good love when we're all alone. Keep it up, girl. Yeah, you turn me on.
listening to 91.5 WMFO Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. Welcome if you're just joining us, or hello if you've been with us for a little bit. My name is Jamie. I'm a DJ here at WMFO, subbing in for Chris for time travel. I'll be playing some songs for the next hour. Some old stuff, some new stuff, just to keep in the tradition of the show that I'm subbing for, which I am subbing. So look forward to that. I certainly am. But before all that, I have a PSA for you. Pedestrian safety is a two-way street.